Welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. Today, we are joined once again by Lloyd Lobo. In this episode, Lobo will be sharing his insights on building a community-led growth strategy. Colin, take it away.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation brought to you by Leadium. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell. And today I've got Lloyd Lobo on the show. He's the co-founder of a fintech company called Boast. And he's also the Wall Street Journal bestseller of Grassroots to Greatness. Yeah. And getting your, you know, first, you know, handful of customers, you know, that founder to founder, you know, sort of approach can be super effective. Right? Because they get it, right? They've been there before. Maybe they're a little bit further along than you, but they understand where you're at, you know, and are also can be some of your best customers because they're willing to give you, you know, pretty candid feedback about stuff, which is super valuable. And in a lot of cases, in the early days, more valuable than even paying customers.
Exactly. Exactly. So here's like actually how we did it. Because when we started, so we were selling very obscure product to a niche, right? So we're basically globally hundreds of billions of dollars are provided in funding for innovation and product development and R&D to businesses by the governments. Like US government gives $10 billion every year. Canadian government gives like $3.5 billion. But it's a cumbersome application process. It's prone to frustrating audits and it takes a long time to get the money. So we said we'll automate this process. And so we started by reaching out to oil and gas, construction, manufacturing. And none of them would talk to us, man. Like, you know, when you're looking back, actually, everything seems like a framework when you've grown something. Now it's at over 20 million ARR. But when you're in the thick of things, it's like throwing spaghetti on the wall and God, make something work. But nonetheless, we started by trying to sell to oil and gas manufacturing and construction, and nobody would talk to us. It was very hard. We started hitting up their events and we just looked like two young guys who threw on a suit jacket on top of a hoodie and they looked like the Cigars Club. We couldn't resonate. So we pivoted strategies, or rather we got disappointed, dejected, and started going to the new business startup events. And we felt like we found our tribe. They were just like us starting out and we had similar challenges. We started to eat, breathe, drink, sleep that where they did. We started to hang out and party together, host events together. And so then we started to bet on the startup market, and this was 2012, and we went deep there. A lot of people would make fun of us saying, oh, what are you going after this market? They're going to go bankrupt and never pay you. I'm like, you guys don't want to service the startups and your customers won't work with us. So we're going to serve our own. I think one of the key things is you got to, you know, in figuring out your ICP, a lot of people, there's a lot written about ideal customer profile. But if you're starting out, how do you figure out your customer profile? My personal philosophy is it a market that you love and you enjoy spending time with? Because as a founder, if you hate your market, as your company grows, you're spending more and more time with your customers, right? If you hate your market, you're not going to sustain. Like, think about it. Like, because of our ICP, which is startups, not only we built Boast for them, which is a product that provides R&D funding to them, we also built a massive community of 120,000 people with conferences and podcasts called Traction. I wrote a best-selling book for that same audience. And it's been a journey of over 10 years. If I hated that audience, I wouldn't be able to sustain, right? The number two thing is it a small but growing niche? I think a lot of people get carried away that, oh, they got to start with a big niche and a big TAM because the VC world has you believe this. But the thing is, when you're starting out, you just want to please 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 people. It's almost important, more important to niche down than to niche up, because when you niche down and niche down, you become more and more like your customer and they see the likeness and you can find white space. So we didn't go after all business. We went after tech businesses. We didn't go after all tech businesses. We went after startups, and we only went after startups in a province in Canada versus startups all over North America. That's where we started. And we found the white spaces was, hey, nobody was giving them any love or coverage. And all the events that were happening, they were high-level CEO platitudes. They weren't tactical advice. And man, if you started a company, there's only so much Elon Musk you can listen to, right? You want to know how I get my first 10 customers and right. how I strike that first enterprise deal. So we found that white space. And at the time in 2012, Instagram wasn't a thing for business content. LinkedIn wasn't used for business content as like no one was sharing like tactical business advice. Podcasting wasn't huge for tactical business advice. It was mostly like blogs and events. And I'm like, you know, it's going to take forever to get a blog to compete with the Neil Patels of the world, the popular guys like the Grant Cardones. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to a local newspaper and asked them to give us a blog. They gave us a blog after much begging and hacks and back channels. And once we got that blog, we actually, you know, didn't, you know, this is another lesson for founders or anyone who wants to make it. Never ask for permission, beg for forgiveness, unless you're doing something illegal. But yeah. we call that blog post Startup of the Week, which implied that the newspaper, the national newspaper, is giving love to all the startups every week. And then when that went live, this is another thing people don't do, is they put stuff on different platforms and they hope the platform will distribute it. No, you got to drive traffic to those first several ones. And so we begged our friends and all our network to like, share, socialize it. And then the editor calls me and says, hey, man, if you commit to writing this every week, we'll make it a print column. And then I wrote that Startup of the Week print column for almost 2.5-3 years. And so it did a few things. One, it gave us instant social proof, because what we're selling is, give me your R&D data and I'll get you funding for the government. So it's a huge credibility play. And with the newspaper giving us social proof, we got that credibility. We got a backlink from the highest domain authority website in the country, which is the newspaper, right? I think it's on par with the EDU sites. And then we put a form in there saying, if you're interested in being featured, apply. So everyone would apply. Now, whoever applied, we started a weekly meetup at a co-working space. Initially, 10 people showed up. We'd invite a speaker who'd talk tactically about how they got their first 10 customers or how they did their first enterprise deal or first angel investment, because we knew that was the gap. And we didn't care how many people showed up. We'd just invite everyone in our network and everyone that applied. We'd never stop. It'd just be like unfiltered, open agenda. And we did that week on week on week on week. And one day, 200 people showed up at the co-working space and they said, you can't have such big events here anymore. And that evolved into a big traction conference. But because we were in this huge credibility play, meaning we need to show credibility, and our product is like almost $20,000 a year ACV, so we need to get in front of people. And I say this now to a lot of people, is if you want to be the cool kid on the block, be the kid that hosts the cool parties. Meaning, we started hosting these startup events. The co-working space let us do it for free. Feeding them was pizza and soda. And we would just bring a good name speaker. And to get one good speaker, probably reach out to 50. And one person would come for free and share tactical advice. And that gave us immense social proof, right? We got the brand rub of the speakers. Eventually, others started sponsoring, who were bigger named companies that sold to the same audience, and we got their social proof as well. And literally, that's how we started getting customers. And we were able to bootstrap to 10 million ARR over time with no marketing team, man.
Wow, that's impressive. But that's definitely some out of the box like strategy there, right? And I think that people don't often think of like non-traditional ways of how do I reach, you know, my ideal customer profile, build that sort of brand and reputation in the process, right? And this was obviously like pre, you know, where, you know, social media platforms weren't kind of where they are today, where, you know, you can do some of that. But I mean, ultimately people love in-person events, and it's a huge opportunity to get in front of a lot of your potential customers and do it in a way where you're adding a tremendous amount of value, right? So I love that. Lloyd, it's been awesome having
you as a founder. you know, as a founder, you have the latitude to do these things. If you're working somewhere else, you can't experiment like this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's no boundaries, right? So test everything. Hey, Lloyd, it's been awesome having you on the show. Any final thoughts? And then where's the best place for people to get into your world?
Definitely. You know what? I'm on a LinkedIn sabbatical because I'm on an all things business sabbatical. But, you know, I've posted some good content on LinkedIn in the past, which has done really well. But you can follow me on Instagram these days. I talk about all kinds of stuff. LLOYED Lobo. My book, it's all about community-led growth. So the key thing there was I looked at my journey and also researched all the iconic brands that started from nothing. And I found a huge commonality. Basically, every obscure idea that eventually became a global enduring phenomena, from Christ to CrossFit, went through the exact same four stages. And I unpack that in the book. Stage one is people listen to you or buy your product. You have an audience. When you bring that audience together to interact with one another on a cadence where you're not forcing it, but you're the facilitator, it becomes a community. When the community comes together to create impact towards a greater purpose, far beyond your product or your profit, it becomes a movement. And when the movement has undying faith in its purpose through sustained rituals over time, it becomes a cult or a religion. Audience, community, movement, religion. So you can find that on LloydLobo.com or from grassroots to greatness. .com. Yeah. And my company, boast.ai, BOAST.ai. If you need R&D funding in the US or Canada, just hit that up and ask for a demo.
Awesome. We'll drop all the links there in the show notes to make it easy. Appreciate you coming on the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, please write us a review, share the show with your friends so we can help more sellers and sales leaders transform the way they sell.